de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Larry. F***ing Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
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 Last week, we celebrated this show's sixth birthday. And now, here we are, on the doorstep of another Christmas. Christmas, like most things in life, has the yin and yang, huh? Tremendous potential for elation or disappointment, amplified by expectations. Often wildly ambitious expectations. It starts early in life. With Santa Claus and Christmas lists. My parents were not fans of Christmas lists. Don't they undermine the whole surprise angle of Santa Claus? Isn't it enough that he manages to visit every kid on Earth in a single night? He's also supposed to bring them precisely the crap they demanded in writing? On Christmas morning, my brother and I never knew what we'd find under the tree. A tree which was never artificial. The old man did not like fake stuff or people. The acquisition of that tree was its own Christmas adventure. Seems it always occurred near dusk or after dark. I guess that's because we'd go shopping when he came home from work. He'd grab a ball of twine and his bone-handled jackknife, a knife I still have. We'd hop into the Ford or Chevy. Sometimes first have to scrape ice off the windshield. We'd head out on the expedition. He'd drive the bigger streets, Queens or Woodhaven or Northern Boulevards, where guys would sell trees against walls of buildings or fences or around empty lots. They'd have a couple of dozen trees, maybe a string of filament light bulbs hung between fence posts. Sometimes you'd see them tapped into the base of a street lamp for power. They were crafty dudes. There was usually a rusty 55-gallon oil drum with a bonfire in it, burning scrap wood, probably gathered from the nearest construction site. When you'd approach their stand, they were always warming their red, frozen hands over that fire. Today, those guys would be arrested, charged with air pollution and tree cruelty and planet destruction, operating without some asswipe license, violating city fire codes. Who knows what else? Anybody who thinks America is still a free country is wrong. Selling Christmas trees was the business of small, temporary entrepreneurs. There was no licensing, no space to rent. It was the adult equivalent, I guess, of a lemonade stand, huh? Corporate behemoths like Woke Depot have driven those guys out of business. It's sad. By the way, Lowe's is somewhat less woke, has comparable prices and a much more pleasant shopping experience. So whenever possible, choose it over Woke Depot. That's my recommendation. Usually the Christmas tree guys would set up within a block or two of each other. The sale would go to the man with the best tree for the least money. Basic capitalism. Dad would walk the line of evergreens like some general inspecting his troops. He had no interest in those shaggy, saggy Scotch pines, no. For him, there was only one breed of Christmas tree, as there is for me, the regal, aristocratic, noble fir. He'd spot one he liked, usually a 6, maybe 7-footer. The guy would pull it away from the pack, give it a shake, bounce the snow off it. They'd always show the fullest side first, but Dad would give it a spin. Sometimes there were gaps big enough to hide a basketball, and if so, it was on to the next one. When he finally found a tree that was just right, the negotiations began. Of course, the closer it was to Christmas, the better those negotiations went for Dad. Once a deal was struck, cash was paid, out came that ball of twine, the jackknife, and up onto the car roof it went. Driving home was a thrill. In my head, I photoshopped away the bricks and concrete of Queens, New York, and layered in a woodsy vista from Thoreau or Robert Frost. That Chevy became a sleigh, lined with red velvet, pulled by a team of Clydesdales like in a Budweiser commercial. When we got home, Mom would marvel at the tree. Dad would stick it in the stand with some water. Overnight, the branches would defrost and relax enough to decorate them. The next day would usually reveal some flaws. One year, we discovered the spiky branch at the top was shaped like a lightning bolt. It was dubbed Crooked Top. We never crowned them with a star or an angel. It was always a shiny red spire, like something from Notre Dame. A lot of the decorations came from Mom's family. They were ancient but beautiful. First, Dad would rig the lights. Next came garlands, always silver, never gold. Then the ornaments, always glass and shiny. There were no crocheted or ceramic anything, nothing branded. No Mickey Mouse or Disney crap. Our Christmas tree was not a marketing channel. And popcorn was for eating, not putting on trees. Last came the tinsel. Or as the box said, icicles. It looked nothing like ice, but it did up the sparkle quotient. Christmas was a much bigger deal back then, and corporations made an effort to keep it true to its roots. Some went to great and costly and original lengths to make it special for their customers. One year, we were in Manhattan seeing all the lights and the gigantic tree at Rockefeller Center, which was magnificent. On Madison Avenue was this huge bank. It was built in a federal-style building, red brick with a slate roof and enormous arched windows that went from sidewalk to ceiling. They had fabulous wreaths, and it was snowing and collecting in the corners of those window panes. As we walked by, we looked inside, and to our amazement, much of the floor of that bank had been turned into a frozen pond, surrounded by evergreen shrubs and a white picket fence. On that rink was a beautiful young woman dressed like an elf. As she skated, she pushed a little sled with runners, and sitting in that sled was a small kid. Well, of course, my brother and I wanted to ride in that sled. I was probably 3, 4 at most, and I was mesmerized by that skating elf girl. There was only one other kid in line for a ride in the sled. We went inside, the music ended, and the vixen in the form-fitting elf costume glided him back to his mommy and daddy. Soon, my brother hopped into that sled and away he went, circling around as some Christmas carol played. Elf girl even executed a figure eight and then pushed him back to us. I was all set to jump in that sled when she mysteriously smiled and skated to the center of the ice, took a deep bow, and vanished into a corner. The music stopped. The lights flickered. It was closing time. I never got my ride on that sled with a beautiful elf girl. On some level, I can relate to Charles Foster Kane. Everybody's got their notions of the perfect Christmas, from Dickensian retro cozy to up-to-the-minute consumerism on steroids and coke. Those two versions of Christmas were really brought to life in the movie Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase. Clark Griswold wants a Christmas that's an amalgam of a middle-class Bob Cratchit and Daniel Boone. He goes out into the wild to cut his own tree. He puts up with annoying in-laws so he can have what he's fantasized will be an old-time family Christmas. He nearly kills himself decorating his home with 25,000 Italian twinkle lights. His kids think he's an idiot. So do the next-door neighbors. The jogging, Chablis-drinking, childless yuppie couple who think Christmas is stupid, yet the wife confesses she kinda sorta wants a tree. That movie is old, but the distinctions between the two groups of Christmas celebrants or non-celebrants, it holds up pretty well. The only time I set foot into a mall is Christmas time, and a few days ago, I walked through one. I'd almost forgotten how awful they are. Any mention of Christmas has been extracted from the marketing. The spirit of Christmas has been replaced by the spirit of gifting and 40% off. It's all weird, kind of depressing, especially the looks on the faces of the shoppers. Expressions range from bored to desperate to anesthetized. Kids screaming in strollers, the strollers piled high with crap that are gifts for a week in landfill shortly thereafter. People are mostly buying crap just to buy crap so somebody doesn't feel slighted on Christmas morning. There's a retailer for every budget, from Target to Cartier. I even passed a Balenciaga store. I'm delighted to report it was deserted. Hopefully it will soon be bankrupt. Burned to the ground would be nice too. There's a fascinating yin-yang story that no one has picked up. It's two separate events, but really one story if you think about it. In Brooklyn, New York, a bunch of high school kids have started a new club, the Luddites. They ditched their smartphones for old-time flip phones. They've disconnected from TikTok, Insta, and Snapchat and reconnected with life. Real life. And they're loving it.
For me, technology makes it a lot easier to be disconnected from reality. You're numbing your brain, you're not really processing anything, you're just entertaining yourself. And that is a lot of times what technology is used for.
So great to have a place to go to where you can socialize without screens.
Where do they meet? Well, after school, they walk into Prospect Park, where they...
We sit around logs and we just talk, we read, we draw.
Imagine that. They gather outside in the woods without adult supervision. They sit on logs and talk to each other and read and draw. And in the video, they're wearing winter coats, gloves, and woolen hats. Is that safe? That school better crack down on this dangerous behavior. Establish a trust and safety committee. Make sure the logs those kids sit on have been safety tested. Monitor their conversations to be sure there's no harmful or hate speech, huh?
I started reading and journaling. I got more committed to running, making clothing. I took in my schoolwork a lot more. I started really liking school.
Well, listen to her. She reads, writes, makes her own clothes, and most dangerously, she runs. That could be very dangerous. How do I know? Because when one of my girls was in grammar school, some kid took a fall and broke an arm while running. So the imbecile faculty banned running in the schoolyard. Yes, they did. What's not mentioned here in this wonderful story is the connection between devices and the true American health crisis, obesity. No. It's not COVID, and it never was. They try to blame fast food, but fast food predates the obesity epidemic by decades. They will never, ever blame cell phones and tablets. Why? Hell, the combined revenues of AT&T, Verizon, Apple, Samsung, that's about $1 trillion. You think they're going to let anybody throw shade on the crap they're selling? Besides, who needs fresh air and exercise? Pfizer's got pills for that. So let's all just sit still, medicate, click those mice, and stroke those screens. The yang to the Luddite clubs are the high school Satan clubs popping up around the country. There's one in Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Virginia. No surprise on those locations, is there? Governor-elect Frankenstein Fetterman looks like something excreted from the anus of hell. Massachusetts made a hero out of Ted Kennedy. And Virginia, well, that's the bedroom of the crud that collects checks on Capitol Hill. The story is getting a lot of coverage. A lot of people want the club gone. Others are screaming about freedom of expression. But of course, the overarching concern is the S-word, safety.
And the continuing coverage this afternoon of a controversial club at a Chesapeake school. The after-school Satan Club was supposed to have its first meeting this afternoon, but we're told that's not happening because a safety assessment has not been completed. Early this week, the Chesapeake School Board opened up for public comment on the club. Once the safety assessment is complete, we should have a better picture of when the club might actually meet.
Satan clubs are not a good sign for the culture. But if those parents are really worried about their kids' safety, maybe they should have a look at the browser history on their iPhones. Now, in case you are at wit's end for last-minute gifts for grown-ups, try searching in the toy department. Yeah, 25% of all toy purchases are now made by adults, not for kids, for themselves. The toy companies call these consumers kidults. Hey, wait a minute, I did an episode about kidults in October 2021. Who knew the term would become famous? It seems kidults are keeping the toy business alive. $9 billion in sales and climbing just from them. They can't get enough Legos and Star Wars stuff. It seems it's all nostalgia-based. I can't think of a single toy from my childhood that I would want today. But I'd still like a ride in that sled, facilitated by that knockout elf chick. But wouldn't I look ridiculous? 6 feet of me piled into a sled made for toddlers? I don't care. Santa, if you're listening, tee it up, man. If that's too tall an order, just slide over to thatlarryshow.com for hundreds more episodes and click the Patreon or PayPal buttons and send a stocking stuffer that way. There's also a P.O. Box address if that's your preference. Now, this is our sixth Christmas together, and along the way, we've established a few traditions, and one is to cast aside the nonsense, nuttiness, and commercialism, and remember what Christmas is really about. The birthday of one guy and the rebirth of the world. It really is the greatest story ever told. And a high school dropout newspaper man managed to tell it as briefly and powerfully as anyone ever has. His name was Jim Bishop, and this is what he wrote for Christmas nearly a century ago. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village. He worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never owned a home. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family. He never went to college. He never put his foot inside a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did any of the things that usually accompany greatness. He had no credentials but himself. While still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed upon a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave. 2,000 years have come and gone, and today he remains the central figure for much of the human race. All the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as has that one solitary life. Thank you for listening and being with me. God bless you, and have a Merry Christmas.